Hi, I'm Jacob.
And I'm Jessica.
Welcome to Whodunit, the podcast where we make wild guesses about fake TV crimes.
Without any clues, context, or apparently accuracy. All right, let's find out.
Who was right?
Who was wrong?
And who is dead? All right, so here we go. I'm Jacob.
I'm Jessica.
And Jessica, what are we doing today?
Today we are doing Picture Perfect Mysteries.
Ooh.
It's a Hallmark mystery show. There are three episodes total, or three like little TV movie thingies. I don't know what you call
TV movies, that's fine. Sure.
Yeah. Available on the Hallmark Channel. We are doing Dead Over Diamonds.
Ooh, diamonds. I like that.
It's the
Makes
second
sense.
One. Oh,
yes.
Go ahead.
No, it's the second one, but it makes sense because like the first one, there was jewel tones everywhere.
Well, you know, I forgot to say last night when we were watching the first one, that teal color comes up in a couple of different places. Like it is in Lady and the Tramp.
Oh.
It's a big color in that film. And then when I was watching The Handmaid's Tale, the TV series, I was like, holy crap, because I was also watching the stuff on Disney, and so I was rewatching Lady and the Tramp.
Tale and Disney, that will give you some, like, whiplash.
No, seriously, I was getting whiplash because I was like, this, it's like the house is exactly the floor plan in, or I don't know, it's pretty close to the floor plan in Lady and the Tramp, and the costumes, the colors, like, it's all like Lady and the Tramp, that teal color. It recurs in different things.
Is this like the number 23? Is this like, this is the Pantone version of the number 23? Oh my gosh, if that like Tiffany blue teal color is Pantone 23, we may have unlocked the mysteries of the universe.
Maybe. It's not Tiffany blue. I mean,
It's not exactly, but it's as close as you can get without prompting a lawsuit.
Okay. Yeah, it's more of that teal Lady and the Tramp, Handmaid's Tale,
100%.
The, you know, Lady of the House color.
And it was everywhere on that first movie.
Oh,
it
my
was in,
gosh.
It was in the police. It was in sweaters. It was on walls. It was in the police office. The police office had binders that were this same color behind one of the main characters.
And
it
did
was,
they also have, like, water bottle cups or, you know,
I'm
things
sure they
also
did.
Behind?
But, I'm
yeah,
sure
it, it was in, it was in, it was like the matting in pictures that were on the wall.
Yes.
Did you say that already?
No.
But I noticed that, too. Not even in her, I mean, it's the theme color of her business, which...
Yes.
The lead...
Okay. Picture Perfect. She's a photographer.
So the leads are,
please.
Right? So this is Hallmark, so it's a romance. Get out your bingo cards. Now you know. Crime, mystery, romance. And it stars Alexa Penavega and Carlos Penavega. Alexa plays a photographer named Allie who owns a studio in the bottom floor of her house. And she does like weddings and graduations and special events.
And kid photos and birthdays and all that stuff.
Yeah. All the photographer things. And then she makes herself into an amateur sleuth who helps Detective Sam, played by Carlos, who is also the actress's husband, to solve murder mysteries.
They're also executive producers on this. This is clearly like something they decided to do together as like a family affair is the wrong way to do it, but they're like, we're a couple, we have chemistry on camera, let's work together, let's be entrepreneurial and put this together.
Yeah.
So we like this color blue, so we should just put it everywhere.
They also star in a couple of other Hallmark things. They have also done The Power Couple, which actually that's not Hallmark, but it's another show that they were the leads in. It's about two kind of superhero type characters who end up putting their suits away and going to marriage counseling.
That sounds cute.
Yeah. And then at least two other Hallmark movies, one called Love at Sea and another one called Love in the Lifeline.
In the first movie, her brother is accused of killing the groom at a wedding, and so she falls into police detecting work or private investigation work to clear her brother's name, which is also how she comes into contact with the police sergeant detective, whatever his rank is, Detective Sergeant Canada, Vancouver, Rhode Island. It's set in Rhode Island, so whatever ranking they have there, he's a detective, moved from the big city of New York back to the small town, still trying to get used to it. But yeah, that's how they meet and flirt and kind of have a grudging mutual respect and attraction for each other.
Yes. Yeah. And, you know, I tried to look for where this is filmed. I'm pretty sure it's Vancouver because the actors are the other actors, you know, like supporting roles are Vancouver based. But yeah, it does take place in Rhode Island.
In a small town in Rhode Island. This is also, so this show has a lot of, they are very witty about certain things. And they very much have a sense of style and they have a weird sense of wit. So let me explain what I mean. Like, in addition to this, like, Tiffany blue almost and teal blue that's everywhere, like every inch of this movie is like set decorated and designed to within an inch of its life, which for a Hallmark movie, I'm like, this is great. Like, I know they don't get the biggest budgets in the world, so somebody is spending a lot of time and thought to figure out how to do this. And it's evident, like it's evident on the screen. And not only is that on the scene, but it's also like the title sequence to this, it's very like Pink Panther-y, mid-mod, kind of like that 60s kind of animation style.
Yeah.
So this show has a verve and style to it, which is just nice. It kind of snaps and pops on your screen a little bit more than other like Hallmark movies would. And then the other thing about the show is that I don't know if the writer was taking the piss, as the Brits would say, or something like that, but there are weird jokes throughout this. Like in the first episode, one of the scenes, she's talking to her assistant and her assistant's just like, yes, don't forget, we have to go photograph the Miskatonic High School prom, which I started laughing hilariously. And Jessica's like, what are you laughing about? Miskatonic was the name of the school and town in Lovecraft. Like that was the, like all the horrors of like other dimensions and space monsters and all that stuff, as well as the horrors of racism, let's be clear about Lovecraft, that all took place at Miskatonic, with Miskatonic University and Arkham Asylum, or rather Miskatonic, which was located in Arkham, which is of course where Batman got Arkham Asylum. So what he's doing, throwing out this, or she, what she was doing, throwing out this reference in the middle of a Hallmark movie, I don't know, but my ears certainly perked up.
Well, then you said that, and then a couple minutes later, there are a number of supporting characters, one of which is, you mentioned, her assistant at the photography studio, and then another is a person who, she's an actress, maybe in, like, community theater locally in the town.
Yes, yeah.
She does kind of like the grifter investigator work where she poses as somebody in order to get information.
Yeah, she's the disguise she's the social hacker. She's the one who's going to go in and like pretend to be somebody else and get them to do the thing. Yeah, 100%.
Yeah. So she, when she shows up at this business trying to get information out of this guy, posing as somebody who has just inherited a bunch of land and wants it developed, she introduces herself as Eve Harrington. Which I was like, oh my gosh, that's all about Eve. Oh my gosh. Well, I mean, it was also funny because there are just so many, like, it's just such a theater nerd thing to say. I mean, it's perfect for her as a theater nerd, but the fact that the writer slipped that in was also great.
There are lots of sly little jokes like this throughout. So it's nice. It's a fun show. It clips along and, you know, yeah. I will say, maybe I'm a little partial to it because I totally nailed who did it in our practice episode.
You did. Oh my gosh. Right off. On the screen, you were like, it's a redhead. And I was like, geez. Before even the body had dropped.
Yes. I don't think I said.
Before we even knew who the body might be.
Right. I said, it's her. So yeah. So that also makes me partial to this show. I'm looking to keep that up. So yeah.
So, well, we should talk about real quick, just a little bit more about Alexa and Carlos.
Sure.
So Alexa is born Alexa Vega and he is born Carlos Pena. And when they got married, they combined their last names.
That's very sweet.
So that's why they are Alexa Pena Vega. She was born in Florida, got her start. Her family moved to California when she was four, and she got her start 6 years old in commercials like JCPenney and McDonald's. So she is a child star.
Wow.
Started in movies like 9 Months and Twister, and she had a recurring character in the final season of Burt Reynolds' Evening Shade, which I know we talked about on this show, because the actress who plays the mother of Aurora Tea Garden, right? No. The baking, Murder, She Baked show, I think.
Yes.
She is also on the Burt Reynolds Evening Shade. But she is most well known for
Isn't Aurora Tea Garden playing... Murder, She Baked?
No, those are two different.
Oh, see? Okay. This is why I appreciate the blue in this series, because it's differentiating it from other Hallmark mystery series.
Yes. Aurora Tea Garden is a librarian. And
Murder, She Baked, that's right.
She's a baker.
That's right. Yes. Okay. The blonde ladies in small towns snooping around. Yeah. I'm just getting confused by them.
Yeah. Well, and one might get confused here, too, because Alexa has had some powerfully different looks in her life. She is most well known for her character Carmen Cortez in Spy Kids.
Oh, okay.
The film series. Mm-hmm. And then she also played Julie Corky in the 2004 film Sleepover, which is about sort of like early tweens having a sleepover and a bunch of stuff happens. And in as Julie Corky.
I would love to hear the pitch on that. It's about a bunch of tweens. They have a sleepover. Quirky stuff happens. And like every executive is like throwing out all their little dirty secrets that they used to do when they were like tweens at like sleepover parties. Like, oh my God, we have to throw in a Ouija board scene. There has to be a Ouija board scene. Or, oh no, do the one where you put their hands in the water. Yeah. Or do the one where you write mean things about them in a book. Yeah. Do the one, like, I can, yeah.
Well, a couple funny things about her. I mean, interesting. She has 180 credits.
Wow. That's amazing, that number of credits.
Yeah. She got married in 2010 for the first time to somebody else, but she divorced that first husband about 2 years and then met Carlos, so Carlos did a lot of guest star stuff. I think his first thing was when he was like 15 years old, his first big credit, but he is most well known for being a member of the band Big Time Rush, which was also a
yes.
Nickelodeon show that he starred in with the band members.
I know.
So yeah, he's been in the business for a pretty long time too. I mean, not as long as her, but you can, so they met at Bible study.
Oh,
and
okay.
Then developed their relationship. From there, they have three kids. And yeah, like I said, they work together a lot. And I do wonder, I mean, I know you said family affair, but I do wonder, like, you know, who likes to be away from their family and, you know, for long periods of time, if they could just do, and they're both actors. So why not just try to make projects that you can do together and you can bring the kids along and everybody can...
And they're producers on this. So, like, I mean, they're literally producing it. So they're working together. They're producing from it. And it's all, like I say, family affair. But to a certain extent, it is kind of like a family business. Like, you're going to produce this. You're going to sell it. You're going to get the money. Like, it makes all the sense in the world to me. I think it's great.
Yeah. Unfortunately, it did get canceled. They didn't ask for more. But, you know, they'll be in plenty of other Hallmark things.
Yes. And I'm sure that their production company is doing lots of other things, too. So...
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. So that's it. So there are leads and they're adorable. By the way, he is 5'6" and she is 5'1". And
oh my gosh,
they are... them dance in the episode yesterday that we were watching. I was like, is she taller than him? Because she was wearing like, you know, 6-inch heels. I don't know. They were so tall. But she is not.
5'1". Wow, that is okay. So yeah, 5'1" and 5'6".
Tiny.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. And then in this episode, I'm so excited, Jacob. Have you looked ahead?
No, I have not. You're the one who does all the pre-watching IMDb research, as I like to call it, cheating.
Right. Well, Eric Estrada is going to be in this episode.
Oh my God. Yes. Okay, we're going right now.
We're just going to stop right now.
We're just going to stop right now.
Eric Estrada plays Carlos's, or his character is Sam Acosta, his chess player uncle that he does correspondence chess with.
He does correspondence chess with Luis.
Luis. Yeah. Yeah. And so for anybody who's listening who doesn't know who Eric Estrada is, he was the star 138 episodes as Officer Frank
Ponch.
How do you say his last? Well, Ponch.
No, Ponch was a sidekick.
No, that was his
That was him. That was his. Okay, great. Yeah, Ponch.
Yeah, Ponchicello? Percarello?
I never know. I just knew him as Ponch.
Percarello. Oh, my gosh. I can't believe I watched that show. Anyway, Chips. He was the star of Chips with him and another guy.
I'm fairly certain I had an action figure of him.
Oh, for sure. I really watched that and that show, and I was like, those motorcycles looked very balanced. I bet I could drive one.
I never knew that. Okay. We'll go get you a police Harley, or they're police BMWs now, but we'll get you a nice fully loaded police Harley. See how you do.
They look very balanced, wouldn't you say? Like,
they are very balanced.
Very
yes.
Grounded and yeah. There are also the two other actors that we were talking about, the assistant photographer, Noah Adamson is played by Trezzo Mahoro, and Sunita Prasad plays the friendly actress investigator that we mentioned. She's been on The Doctor and Unreal and the Chesapeake Shores show. She's also done Nancy Drew and Eureka, again, Vancouver.
So why don't you tell us the logline for this one, this Diamonds episode?
Yes. Okay. The logline is, photographer Allie and Detective Sam's investigation into a priceless stolen necklace leads to danger and an unexpected death.
Okay, well, here's a question for you then. If the crime is this stolen jewelry, do we stop at the crime or do we stop at the death?
Well, the episode is called Dead Over Diamonds, so I think there is going to be a murder.
Okay, so we'll stop at the murder.
Yeah, yeah.
Should we throw this to the podcast adjudication board, see what they say?
Yeah, let's give them a text.
We'll throw it up there and then watch for the semaphore signals as they travel down the coast from Squamish. But while we do that, we'll go and watch this first little bit and we'll let you know how it goes. So if we were going to do a heist movie, who would you be in the heist?
Well, I do love Leverage.
Yes.
And Sophie's character. I just, she gets to dress up. She gets to pretend she's somebody else. I love all that.
So the social hacking. Yeah.
You
want to do the grifting part of everything.
Yes. The grifter. Yeah, I do.
Yeah.
Okay. How about you?
I'm thinking about that. Like, part of me thinks that, like, I would absolutely be the nerd. I'd be your hacker kind of guy on this, except I don't really know any hacking. And so then part of me is just like, no, I'm just going to be the muscle. I'm just going to go in and, like, beat people up. And then you look at me and you're like, Jacob, you're not the muscle. Let's just be clear on this. So I don't know. I guess that leaves the mastermind. So, yeah, I'm the mastermind.
Yeah, you could be the mastermind.
I will be the mastermind, and maybe I'll get things right if I'm the mastermind. Or maybe I should just stick to the podcast and not try to do a life of crime, seeing as what my record is on the podcast.
I didn't see that coming. Okay. Fair enough.
And anyway, we have a heist in front of us, though. We stopped before we got to a body. Jessica was a little disappointed. There were some tears.
Oh, well, yeah. I was like, I don't want to say this on the pod, but now I'm going to say it. I'm a little disappointed. It is called Dead with Diamonds, or what did
over.
I say it's called?
Dead Over Diamonds.
Yeah.
Yes. I'm sure there will be a murder. It's just I think the murder is going to be like your act two twist. So you're much too far into it for there to be any
kind of
legit guessing. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, there'll be consequences, but I think we'll definitely have a lot more information about it all. So right now, my money's on the waiter or the guy who has angina, which is just one of those words which just sounds...
Well, it's missing a V.
It's missing, so. and some letters are in the wrong order, but it just sounds like an angina. But anyways, yes, there's a man who looks like they went to the Hallmark Christmas movie section, found one of their Santa Clauses, brought him over to the mystery section and said, you're going to have an angina attack during this heist scene. Or no, right after the heist scene. Okay, well, before we get in too deep into this, we should tell you what happens. So. Yeah. there's an art showing at a gallery. The gallery is owned by Camille, who happens to be Noah's mother. And yeah. Allie is there to take photos of all the fancy guests. And some of the fancy guests are, I think his name is Thomas.
Oh, gosh. You remember the names of the people that we met?
A couple.
I'm really hoping that you remember what the lady said who, you know, she had all the knowledge of Catherine Stansbury.
Yes, Reed, Gwendolyn.
Gwendolyn. Okay. And she said that she had all this knowledge because she's an expert in jewelry or
no,
in
she
this
was
particular
the granddaughter.
Jewelry?
She was the expert of this jewelry because she was the granddaughter of Catherine Stansbury Reed. Mm. And then Maya, the actress friend, is just like, huh, well, why isn't it not on your neck and on display? And Gwendolyn gets all frosty, and Gwendolyn is just like, that's a good question. But anyways, but we'll get there. We'll get. So there's a bunch of things on display. There, Camille, who is Noah's mother, Noah's assistant, has a gallery. She's putting on the display of a collection of James Risen. He is a reclusive but snooty art collector. He has a fawning assistant who is really...
Isn't that his brother?
It is his brother, but his brother is also his assistant. But yes, we find out later it's his brother. And his brother is doing a great Fred Armisen. I literally have to wait a minute. That's not Fred Armisen? Okay, great.
Oh, you thought it was a Fred Armisen? So, okay. I was thinking it's from Bob's Burgers. It's the brother of Mr.
Yes.
What's his
Mr.
name?
Fishoder.
Mr. Fishoder.
There's Mr. Fishoder and then his sniveling little brother and that. Well, he's not sniveling. The
Bruce?
Brother isn't sniveling.
Is
I forget. And anyway,
yeah.
We're wildly off track. There's an art opening. One of the pieces on display is a very famous diamond necklace. The brother tries to get something else out of a locked glass case, which is this famous dagger. He gets Camille to get him the security key. And then that's great. They get that. Then as James Risen is about to give a speech, the lights flicker, the lights go out. They're only out for a minute. Then when they come back on, a waiter, this is hilarious. A waiter accidentally stumbles and falls. And the waiter has already been shown to be a klutz because Allie literally runs into the waiter earlier, but this waiter nearly drops a tray, which starts a domino effect of people falling. They all fall into a podium that has a vase on it. They knock it over. Maya grabs the vase. It is a little bit of comic physical slapstick mischief. It's hilarious. But after that happens, Santa Claus has an angina attack. After the angina attack, they realize that the necklace has been stolen. So yeah. There
you
go.
You missed one important fact.
What did I miss?
That is that the brother, when he goes into the security room with Camille following her while she's getting the key mm-hmm. from the secret place, she has to put her card against the security
right.
thing in order to open a drawer that has the one single key to it. Or inside
and
it.
Lots of security cameras.
He kind of, there's a little moment of making eyes at the security guy, just a little bit. And then the security guy is asked by Camille says, I hope you don't mind, but I would like him to accompany you. And he says, oh, of course, I would feel more comfortable if he did while I was holding the knife. And so the security guy leaves with the camera still running, but there is nobody else in that room.
Yeah, there's
and
nobody
so
else.
Yeah, and he goes to supposedly stand by the guy with the knife, but I don't think we ever really see him again.
We don't, not yet, at least, anyways. But yeah, there you go. So apparently everyone's accounted for, and the heist happened, and now James Risen is very upset and threatening to put Camille out of business. So it's Allie on the case.
Yeah. Yeah, it's going to... And there are security cameras. There are 8 security cameras on that necklace, but none of them have any video.
They were all out for two minutes.
2 minutes, yeah.
Yes. So here are our suspects. We have the waiter who runs into people. Mm-hmm. We have Thomas, who is married to Gwendolyn Stansbury Reed. And they're very, she's very snippy with him. We have Angina Man, also known as Santa Claus with the Heart Attack. And that's a t-shirt, Santa Claus with the Heart Attack. We have the brother/assistant. We have, for that matter, even James Risen could be
a suspect. I think so.
Because he could be getting the insurance money for all of this.
Yeah.
And that's it. I think those are all of our suspects that I can know about. What I noticed, what clearly they're doing this time, which we couldn't tell. That's the waiter.
Oh, the waiter and the security guy. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. What they're doing on this, they did this in the last episode as well, but this is the second one we've seen, so we're able to see more patterns on this. Like, they do the rather, like, in Endeavor, they do a kind of montage at the beginning where they show you a snippet of everybody's life, and those are your suspects. Those are the people you're going to follow throughout this thing. But in this one, what they do is, as Allie is walking around taking photos of people at the event, she takes photos of the people at the event, and those are clearly going to be the suspects and people they question throughout. So I didn't take good enough notes to catch them all, but Santa Claus Man was one of them. And I will say this here, I'm not sure I'm going to change my vote yet.
Oh,
but
you forgot somebody.
Who did I forget?
Somebody that you are going to accuse, because you said it out loud.
Santa Claus Man.
No, the Daniel Drake, the supposed society journalist.
Oh, that's right. Yes. So while while Allie is taking, so I have two people I need to choose from here. So while Allie is taking photos of things, she sees another man taking photos. And she's like, who are you? I thought I was the only photographer here. And he says, well, I'm Daniel Drake. I work for the newspaper. I'm their society reporter. And she's like, oh, okay. And he's like, well, have a good day. Yes, you too. Have a good day. And I was like, oh, wait a minute. It's him. Because he's very clear to get her name. And yes. So yes, you're right. I think it's either a Santa Claus with angina or it's that man right there. But the waiter is definitely in cahoots with all of this. Or the waiter's either in cahoots or the waiter is there to hit on Maya because he knew that Maya would be there. That's what I say about that.
Okay, so you've said a lot. So you now have to make your guess. You cannot force it. Me to go first. You have to make your decision and then you have to stick with it. No changing.
No changes?
No changes. After listening to mine, you're like, convincing argument. I'm going to change.
Doesn't matter. I'm always wrong. I change. I stay the same. All right. I'm sticking with the society reporter because it's just too convenient. I think
Shoot, I shouldn't have brought it up.
No, I do. I think I'm not sure if Santa Claus was in cahoots with him, but I do think it was the society reporter because one thing they've started doing in this episode, like last episode, they were very clear that it was a small town. It's a small town. It's a small town.
Yeah.
They have called this a city twice now in this episode. I'm like, what happened to the whole small town vibe? Now it's a city? In any event. All right.
Wait a minute. I have one more.
Yes.
Who was the guy in the white jacket? Because it's a black and white kind of theme party. Mm-hmm. Everybody's wearing black and white. And there was one guy in a white jacket who had
kind of walked up in the middle of everything.
Yeah, he kind of had poofy hair. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I don't know. We don't know anything about him yet. But you're right. He did show up. And they did take a photo of him, but we don't know name. We don't know anything about him other than white jacket man.
Yeah. Okay.
I do. I bet it was Society Paper Man because I don't think they're going to bring in a real society reporter character in this town. So I bet it was him. I bet he was working with the brother, maybe blackmailing the brother or maybe offering the brother a little bit of a cut because the brother is clearly under the thumb. The thing about this is there's so many moving parts in a heist movie. Think back to Ocean's 11. Everybody's got to do their special little part. So yeah. I can't wait to see how all these pieces interlock with each other. But I bet it was the newspaper man because he's so keen to know who she is. What's your name? What are you doing? Who are you? What are you here for?
Yeah, and she's a photographer, of course. I mean, if anybody works in society, they know there's always an official photographer because there's got to be somebody there to have three ladies standing by some rich guy. Everybody's just a little bit drunk or looking very uncomfortable because somebody else is drunk in the room.
Exactly. So I'm going with him. It's the same motive. He just wants to get rich. That's what I say. I don't think there's any kind of justice or anything to it. Mm-hmm. I think he thought it would be a good heist. And he wanted the cash payoff. So that's what I think. That's what I'm going with.
Yeah. See, now that
is
good.
You made me go first.
I did. And that is really good. I was the person that reminded you of him to that effect. And I do think you're right that there it is going to be a heist, like with different people with different responsibilities. And there's going to be a reason why she wanted to hustle out of there so fast. I don't know if that's because she...
She graffitied something.
Really?
I don't know. That was just my random. She had a Sharpie and she was like writing like, "You suck it, James," on like a vase or something.
Or she just realized she got her period and needed to go home.
Yes.
Yeah, I just can't be here anymore. And she got splashed on. She was splashed on by the waiter.
Yeah.
She really got a big splash. So maybe, you know, she's like dripping down the front of her dress and that's uncomfortable. But yeah, she wants to, and she's sad about the jewelry. No, but I think she saw the jewelry go.
Oh, that's interesting. So yeah, she saw it go. So she knows who has it. So she's like, we're going to blackmail them to get this back.
Yeah, because she does not like James Risen.
No.
I also think that for sure James Risen and his brother. Well, and also did you notice that James Risen was very upset about his brother's drinking and put it down the
Yes. His brother was making a martini at one point, and James told his brother to go
in the middle of the day.
In the middle of the day, and James told his brother
the morning,
to go.
Actually,
yeah. James told his brother to go pay the gardeners, and as the brother left, and so James threw out his martini into the sink.
Yeah. And the way he said it, too, you have to go pay the gardeners, and he kind of goes, okay, I will go pay the gardeners. So yeah. I just wonder if this is like, quote unquote, go pay the gardeners, like get out of the room. I don't want you talking to these people.
I would think that, except I think... I think it was less a euphemism and more just humiliating. I think he was just upset that he was being humiliated. Like, he's trying to be, like, the brother's trying to be all, like, flash and upper crust, making himself a martini. I'm running this house. I belong here. You don't. And then the brother comes in and James comes in and just puts him in his place. So I think he was just upset over that. But
he was trying to do a power move and it just fell flat.
Yeah, exactly. And James just cut him off.
Yeah, like he's trying to... So I think that this is an insurance scam. I think you mentioned that, but I think that it is.
On James's part.
Yes. So I think that's what's going to happen is they're going to try to make money both ways. And I think that the whole thing, like James wanting his brother to get the knife out of the thing was just a ruse. James,
absolutely. Just to learn how the security system worked.
Yeah, well, or just because maybe there's only one key for all of the different things. And so that was the brother's job and the security guard's job is to get out of the security room, not watch what things are happening. And then the knife was just, you know, just hold the knife and then give me the key or somebody else will steal the key from you. Or maybe the brother is so dumb that he just is like following the rules, and then the key gets stolen from him by somebody else who is going to steal the necklace, but then they think they're stealing the necklace to...
You're losing me, Jess. You're down so many rabbit holes. And then...
I think that's what was going to happen. I think they're going to steal the necklace thinking that they are getting a cut of this through somebody else, but then it's going to turn out that the real necklace was never on display. It was always...
Oh, it was always the fake one.
Yeah.
Interesting. Okay.
Yeah. So...
So you think James is behind it all?
I think he is.
Okay. You heard it here.
That's my guess.
Gotcha. I should also say, so a couple other things that we didn't really talk about, but I just want to put out there because it's so much fun before we go and watch the rest of this. But those are our guesses. We're going to lock those in there. She's going with James and insurance fraud. I'm going with newspaper society reporter man as the mastermind of the heist. A couple other things I want to say. So Eric Estrada did show up and he's great. He's so much fun to watch. But also they filmed the scene of him coming to visit Sam in the morning. Like he comes in the morning and it's so cold. Oh my God. Like you just see, like you literally see the, like, I mean, obviously their breath is like, you can see their breath in it, but you can practically see the steam coming off of their bodies. It's so cold in the morning. And like Eric Estrada is wearing this like short sleeve Hawaiian shirt because he's meant to be just coming from his retirement on these islands. But he's also got, like, he's wearing that over a very thick, gray, long sleeve shirt. So it's clearly like, nope, I can't do this. It's too cold. I need to actually be covered up.
Yeah, yeah. And he isn't, he's not wearing a jacket.
Yeah.
He barely has, well, as we learned today, he has a gunny sack.
He has a gunny sack, yes.
He has a canvas bag of all his possessions with him for this trip. And so it doesn't look like there's much in there that's going to warm him up. Oh, yes. Poor guy.
And I will also say that Noah, this semester, Noah is studying forensics. So there you go. He's still going on with all the Law and Order stuff. So anyways, so there we go. We're locked in. We're going to go watch this and have some more fun. We'll be right back.
See you soon.
So, Jessica.
So winner, Jessica.
Yes, that is in fact what I mean. So winner. Congratulations, Jessica. You win the prize.
Thank you very much.
It is not a diamond necklace. The prize is not a diamond necklace. You just get another point.
Perfectly symmetrical diamond necklace.
Absolutely costume jewelry necklace. I can get you one of those, no problem. It'll be perfect and grand.
Yes, Jessica.
Totally nailed it. Just absolutely 100% nailed it.
I don't know about 100%.
What did you mean 100%? You said that James Risen was behind it and he was going to do it for insurance fraud and he was going to sell it and get insurance money.
Yes.
And that is exactly what happened. The rest of the nonsense, which we don't have time to go through the rest of the nonsense. The plot machinations that made this happen was just unbelievable.
Oh, and we did get a dead body.
It was
34 minutes in.
So I'm glad we stopped at the crime. I'm glad we didn't wait for that because we would have got, you know, honestly, I don't know that the clues would have helped us because I think our guesses probably would have been the same. So yes, Jessica got it right. I was wrong. I really wanted that. So it turns out the reporter was just a reporter.
Yes, and I was so surprised. He was so nefarious, even in the last scene.
He was totally nefarious. They had that ball in the air really well. He comes up later on and somehow he gets a little clue and you always think that he's just like checking up on her. And then there's one final stakeout scene at a marina and he like comes up at her at night and like surprises her. And you're like, oh, he's totally the bad guy now. But no. But no, he was just a reporter who had a little bit of a crush on her, who was trying to hit on her. And she didn't want any of it. She's like, my heart belongs to Sal. I mean, she didn't say that. She didn't even say she was dating anybody. But you could tell. You could just tell. Her heart belongs to Sal.
To Sam. Sam. Sam.
Sam.
His name's Sam.
His name's Sam? I thought it was Sal.
Yeah, Sam.
Sam. S-A-M. Okay, Sam. Fair enough.
You were one letter off.
That's okay. You know me and names. I have to be reminded what my best friend's name is, so.
Yeah, but, you know, even so, he was hitting on her. I was really glad that she was. I mean, of course, she's going to say no, but I guess I felt like the director also spent like an extra bit of time where she was like, oh, no. And he looks at her like, oh, you've got somebody else. You already have another date. And she was like, well, she's not going to explain it. But there's I feel like there's an extra pause there where she's going to say, well, I'm actually married to somebody.
She had to remember her lines. Like, yeah, I married him. No. Oh, right. My character is not. My character is not. Okay, yes, you're right. Can we take that again?
Yeah, I really felt like there was an extra moment there for us all to be like,
I'm sure that's what was going on. Yes.
Yeah. And go ahead.
No, I was going to say, they have another really great murder board in this one. And there's a little funny bit of slapstick scene in there where she's trying to like hide. Sam has come over to question her about something and she's like, oh, we have to hide the murder board from him before he sees it. And so she's trying to figure out a way to like hide it. And Noah has left because Noah is trying to hook them up and make sure they like fall in love with each other. And Sam is looking away and she's trying to move the murder board around. And he, without even looking back, he's just like, I know what's there. I've seen it already. You need to stop this. And also I will of course, they give Sam a tragic backstory. He was in love with this assistant district attorney and she died trying to prosecute organized crime. And that's why he ran off to Willow Haven because he was just so upset with himself for not being able to bring them in. And there's a great, great monologue scene where he's just like, I'm really, really digging deep in acting. And Eric Estrada just gets to stand there and look at him and look concerned.
Oh, no, it wasn't Eric. It wasn't Eric Estrada. It wasn't his uncle. It was the other police guy.
You're right. It was the other police guy. Yes.
Yeah, because he was working late and looking through files or something. And then.
But Eric Estrada does tell him he needs to let it go.
It does.
It does to say that earlier. Yes.
Yeah.
And he gives him some very good soulful advice later on. They're all the beats. All the beats you would expect to find are here. The like, and like at the marina, she gets captured. She manages to text the police that something is happening, but then she gets captured and she's about to be killed. And then the cops show up and they throw her into the water. And then Sam can't even continue the chase. He's got to dive into the water after her and save her from the, like, it's a marina. She's 3 feet from a pier with a ladder on it, but he's got to do it. And so they get back on the dry land and they're like, oh, you care for me. All the beats are there.
Yeah. And she says, I was on varsity swimming, the swimming team. And he's like, oh, yeah, of course. Of course. Yes. Like, you can take care of yourself, which, I mean, she can. But these people were pretty, like, baddies. And there were a lot of them. It wasn't just one person.
Oh, my goodness. So every person we saw, like Jessica was saying, like, every person we saw in the intro was involved in this. It's like, how did you think you were going to get away with this when literally everybody in town apparently was in on this plan? Somebody was going to crack. Somebody was not going to be happy with how much money they made on the split. Like, I made a joke earlier about how, like, during the organized chaos, like, the waiter runs into somebody and then all these people fall into each other and then a vase. Like, practically every single person in this plot falls on each other right there. It's...
Yes.
Santa Claus Man was involved. His name, Santa Claus Man, God bless, he thought he was doing immersive theater.
Yes, that was hilarious.
He was the only one who didn't know the whole plan. Literally everybody else knew the whole plan. Like, everybody knew the plan except for Santa Claus, which, honestly, I prefer it that way. I want to think of my Santa Claus as, in the off season, as a community theater player. Just, you know, out there trotting the boards. Just getting gigs. Just doing a mousetrap here, a Thénardier there. What do you think Santa Claus's favorite musical is?
Oh, wow. Maybe Little Shop of Horrors?
Oh, that's a good one. That's a good one. Yeah, sure.
It's complete opposite of...
Well, no, that's not true. Little Shop of Horrors in Cleveland growing up, there was a TV station that would always play Little Shop of Horrors on Christmas Eve.
What? So
I am not even kidding. It was a yearly thing. They would play Little Shop of Horrors on Christmas Eve.
That is bonkers. How did I... And what? Like, who wants to watch that movie on... Okay.
Look, there's a reason I think Alien is a Christmas movie.
I guess. Oh my gosh, you're just piling on. Wait, so did that channel show, it showed Alien right
no,
after
no, no. That's just,
Little
that's
Shop
just,
of Horror?
No. That's just my own little weirdness happening
right
there.
Oh, okay. You're just from Cleveland, hence weird.
Yeah, okay, that tracks. Sure.
Was inculcated.
Yes. I come by it honest.
Yes, yeah, okay. Wow, all right. Well, okay, what do you think it would be? What musical...
I'm trying to think. I'm racking my brain. I can't think of...
Elf?
Yes. Elf or...
Seussical?
Elf? Seussical? Or there's... What's the one with Ralphie that they play?
Oh, A Christmas Story?
A Christmas Story. That's a musical now. I bet that's got to rank on Santa Claus's favorite thing.
You don't think he's, like, into A Bronx Tale or...
No.
Like, Next to Normal?
Oh my God.
Spring Awakening.
I really want to. Oh, jeez. I want to see Santa Claus being like, no, I can pull off a teenager. I'm young enough. I can still do a teenager for Spring Awakening. Don't make me a horrible parent in Spring Awakening. Oh my gosh, that would be amazing. Make that happen. Casting directors, make that happen. Santa Claus and Spring Awakening. Go.
Yeah. No, it doesn't mean he has to be in it. It just means he enjoys it by himself.
Fair. Okay. Sure. Okay, then another question here. What do you think is Santa Claus's favorite? What do you think is his audition monologue?
Oh, wow. I think it's definitely from Book of Mormon. I think it's the when what's his name tells the story of of Jesus.
Yes, yeah, you're making things
like
up again.
Star Wars and
100%
Elder. It's not Elder Price. What's
Elder Cunningham.
Yeah, I think so. Okay, well, what do you think? That's mine.
No, I think that's great. I want to see him do Willie Loman from Death of a Salesman.
Oh, my goodness. Yes. Oh,
Santa Claus really struggles with that. He's like, how come he can't just give his kids everything he wants? I'm able to give presents to everybody all year. How come Willie Loman can't just give things to people? Like, that really touches him on a deep level. I really think he has a deep connection to Death of a Salesman. He's like, when I die, attention must be paid.
Yeah. Oh my gosh, Jacob, are you suggesting that Santa is not the beginning and the end, that he has a death?
That's a good question. That's a good question.
We're going down a rabbit
hole. We're going down a deep rabbit hole here. We don't need to go in. Let's talk about the design of this again, because once again, they did really good work with the design.
Yes.
You have even admitted that you think it is a Tiffany blue now.
Yes, I did. I did. And our TV, it needs a little color work, and I turned up the brightness the other day. So
yes, you did.
It might be playing with the color. Because when we were watching the Super Bowl, I was convinced that Rihanna was wearing pink, like hot pink. And then everybody was reporting the next day, like, oh, her red outfit. And I was like, she was wearing hot pink. I mean, it was very cool. Cool, hot pink. I was really excited about it. And they were like, no, it's red. Oh, that must be our TV. Yes, so it's probably a Tiffany blue, and yeah, it looks really great.
It looks really good, but they also, like, they still have, like, the police station still looks like a preschool. Like, there's still just such an amazing little craft services kitchen in the background of Sam's desk over there, and all the little folders match.
It did look like a preschool. It looked like preschool cubbies behind him.
Yes.
And there's a fruit basket. A fruit basket.
Hey. Let's not stereotype cops. They don't eat donuts all the time. They can have fruit baskets.
Okay. Why not? But
I will say, though, that they do the same thing that everybody else does, where it's like, it's late at night, so a place of work must be dark, even though there are many people working here. Who does this? Even though it's a night shift, who has, like, people don't turn out the lights when they're still in an office at night. It's that horrible fluorescent glow. But no, if you're coming into an office at night, all the lights have to be dim.
No.
And there's only desk lamps on it.
Oh, okay.
Because they're working late.
I wish that we had rewound this now, because when it's close to the last scene, it's like the 11th hour.
It's a great, it's a great scene.
She comes in. Go ahead. Sorry.
No, go ahead.
Well, she comes in to give him, Sam, Allie comes in to Sam's office at the police department. And when I say office, I mean the
his
like,
desk area,
pit bull that he's sitting in.
Bullpen. He's sitting in a pit bull. We've gone full Empire Strikes Back. It's too cold. Please go on.
He's sitting at his desk, and she comes in to give him a clue, and he's like, you cannot do this. It is dangerous. People have been killed, and you really cannot be doing this. And she's like, I can take care of myself, and you don't know me, and I thought we were partners. And I was like, oh my God, I had all these mixed feelings, because I was like, yes, you can take care of yourself. Yes, we want this, and we want you to be doing this because it's a TV show. But seriously, honestly, in reality, you are tampering with evidence. Your evidence is inadmissible. So let the police do this. Yeah. So I was upset about it. But I'm fairly certain we could rewind this. I'm fairly certain that the light was full on when she came to visit him. And then as the scene went on, it got darker and darker and darker, so that when he goes to the elevator, the light elevator is like fully lit, and he gets in the elevator, and then she has a moment and the camera's on her face. And that was some good acting, where she was like, God damn it, she's not going to say God damn it because she's a...
Because
Hallmark. But in her face, you could see that she was thinking like, damn it, I'm going to do this anyway. He doesn't believe in me or whatever. But I will also note that when so we're going to jump forward and then we're going to jump back, right? She's thrown into the water by the bad guys.
Yeah.
And then, you know, she saves herself because she can swim, but, you know, he goes in after her. They land on top of each other, blah, blah, blah. And then she's like, no, I'm cold right now. I'm fine. I'm just cold, because it's like raining, sleeting rain. on the camera, and she has been wearing like cashmere turtlenecks through like this whole episode. And
that last scene must have been all of the stakeout and everything like that. It must have been murder to shoot because we know it's cold. We saw how cold it was in an earlier scene, and it was at night. It was cold, and it was legit raining.
Like it was legit raining. I thought maybe it was for looks, but then see on the other props around them that they were all gathering.
Yeah, no, that must have just been miserable to shoot. Yes. And they both had to dive in the water and get wet. Like that's some commitment right there.
Yeah,
they know like one take that you got one take on that, people.
Yeah. So in the next scene, you see he's got a sweatshirt. He's got sweatpants.
Yeah, he's changing his sweats. It's very cute.
And she's been put into some sort of, you know, warm, cozy sweatsuit also that's appropriate and just sized just for her. And her hair is like way longer and looks like it's just been air dried, you know, because she just came out of the water and she's like a suspect and having to be questioned and whatever. But when she came in originally to tell him about this clue, about, you know, this thing going down at 10 p.m. at the docks, her hair was so perfect wavy. It was so pretty. It was so pretty. And her makeup was really well done. She looked super cute. And so when you see the difference between her, like, air-dried hair and, which I'm not saying it looks bad or anything, but it's just notable, like, we're being told that she did her hair and her makeup to go see him at the police department and deliver this clue to him about this stakeout.
Interesting.
And so now she's, you know, she's not bedraggled because she still looks cute, but, you know, her hair is air dried.
She's a little worse for wear.
Yeah, it's not done. And of course, it's TV, so her makeup still looks pretty good, but she's a little barefaced compared to what she looked like before. And so, yeah, I think that was supposed to be a clue that she had, like, dressed up for him. And so when he leaves and it's like, you have to not do this anymore, and he doesn't even know about this clue that she's about to give him, or she would have given him, and he leaves in the elevator and leaves her behind in the office, standing there, and the camera takes in her face, and she's like, I'm thinking in my head, you know, damn it, I'm going to do this anyway. I'm going to show him. But she's also like, well, what can I get through to this guy? I really do want to partner with him, but I can't really tell if he likes me. Because she did say that. Was it that in this episode or the last one where she was like, I don't really know if he likes me. I don't even know. Or was that something
that was
else
a little
I was watching?
One. There was a lot of will they, won't they in this one as well. I just want to, something occurred to me when you're doing that. And I just want to share this with everybody. And I just want to say, this has been Costume and Makeup Corner with Jess.
Okay, yes.
So did you look her up? What can you tell us? Or her, him, for that matter. Did you look them up?
Yes. So the costume and wardrobe department head is Nicole McCormick. She worked on Legion.
Oh, wow. That's a great show.
Yeah, she also is currently on Nick and Nora Sister Sleuths, which a couple of other people on this show have worked on. Sounds fun.
That does sound fun. We should put that on the list.
Yeah, and there's a TV movie, I'm assuming this is a Hallmark, called Sense, Sensibility, and Snowmen.
Sensibility and Snowmen?
Yeah, 2019.
I take it back. That may be Santa Claus's favorite.
Yeah, you're
favorite
right.
Movie. Yes.
Oh, she also did the TV movie Amish Abduction. That's got to be a Lifetime.
Yeah, that's got to be a Lifetime thing. Yeah.
And so then the makeup department head is Deneen Dale. And she has also Garage Sale Mysteries in her body of work, her resume.
We've scrolled by that to get to Picture Perfect. Yep. Maybe that's in our future.
Yeah. She also worked on Aurora Tea Garden and Dirk Gently's Holistic Detective Agency.
Okay. Keeping it quirky.
Yeah. She's done some Lucifer. She's done some Arrow, Sorority Murders. She's also done some Lifetime, seems like. That's probably a Lifetime movie.
Yeah.
Hannah Osborne was the assistant makeup artist on this episode, and she has boatloads of Hallmark on her resume.
Nice.
Although I will say this is her second credit. Picture Perfect Mysteries is her second credit. So her career really took off in 2020. She's got so many credits, 2020, 2021, and then 2022. So she hooked into the Hallmark team and they were like, yes, yes, and yes.
And she's makeup, right?
Yeah, she is makeup assistant.
I wonder what, Hannah, if you're listening, reach out, tell us, what are the makeup tricks you did to like keep it real with a mask?
With the mask?
If they're doing all these movies in 20 and 2021 and 2022, there's kinds of masking going on. So she has to have some massive tips about all that.
Yeah, yeah. There's also a Jillian Timos who was in the makeup department. And that is... Oh, she actually, sorry, Jillian Timos, she's done makeup, but she is actually the key hairstylist for this show. And
so good job on the wavy and the air drying.
Yeah. And she also worked on Sense and Sensibility and Snowman.
Wait a minute. Is it Sensibility and Snowman or is it Sense and Sensibility and Snowman?
Sorry. Sense, Sensibility and Snowman. Sense,
oh
comma,
my God.
Sensibility
and Snowman.
We
just may have to end this podcast right now and go watch that show. Oh my God, I am in love with that title. Great.
This has really come full circle. I mean, I think you're right. You know, Santa would love that one.
Well, Santa would absolutely love that one. And if our Santa Claus is in that episode, we will release a special podcast all about that actor. Because just good job, man.
Yeah, he was pretty great. And the costume designer is Barbara Greguzova.
Good job.
Greguzova.
Barbara. We're doing our best.
So sorry. She, great job, Barbara, has a bunch of images in her image gallery on IMDb.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of times people don't have any images there, you know, along with all of her credits and stuff. And I want to say that her images include a lot of her renderings for different things.
Oh.
Yeah. And not for TV, but it looks like maybe it's kind of just like, here are my experimental renderings. I can do cool things. Go and check out her images and her renderings. There's also some jewelry on here. It's really,
beautiful
stuff.
She designed the necklace that everybody was after in this.
Oh my gosh. Yeah.
I bet she did. I bet she fought the prop designer for it.
Right. Yeah, that's one of those crossover things that like usually the prop people would be like, this is my area. But yeah, maybe if she was the specialist, they'd be like, okay, yeah, we would like you to do that. So this person that we are referring to as Santa, who is the community theater actor.
Yes, hired to pretend that he has angina because he was told that it is an immersive theatrical experience. He's the only one who doesn't know the whole plan.
Hilarious. So the actor's name is Russell Roberts, and he is actually Welsh. Looks like he was born in Wales.
I was waiting. I was going to let you get there yourself.
Yeah. So it looks like he was actually born in Wales, and he did his special theater training at the Old Vic Theatre School in Bristol, England.
Mm-hmm.
And he lists his resume details, 40 plus years as a theatre actor, 30 plus years in film and TV, extensive theatre, musical theatre resume on request.
Helen, you see, musical theatre on request.
Yeah, and he does have 64 credits, including a number of video game voiceover for
that's nice.
Playing the king in the Barbie Mariposa and the Fairy video games. Hilarious. Or Barbie as the Island Princess, Barbie as Rapunzel, Barbie as Magic of Pegasus. So he's some fun.
He's the king in all those. Yes, that sounds great. All right, who else do we need to know about?
Well, I do want to mention the two writers that are credited for this.
Yes, please.
The first is Walter Klenhard, who the characters are based on. And he is an American film director, writer, actor. And he's done a bunch of stuff. A lot of it I don't recognize, but clearly it doesn't sound like, as far as I can see, that he created these characters in like a novel or something. Like maybe he pitched it and they were like, oh yeah, but we're going to have Marcy Holland, who wrote the three episodes, movies of these versions.
Yeah.
She actually did it. She has 49 credits as a writer, associate producer, co-producer, meaning that she's a writer.
Yeah, yeah.
And 22 of them are Hallmark credits and a handful of Lifetime TV movies. She is consulting producer for a movie. Okay, she does a ton of Christmas movies. And the Hallmark, and she was actually interviewed on a podcast to talk about writing Hallmark and writing Christmas movies. And I haven't listened to it yet, but I bet it's a hoot. But okay, so having said that, I just wanted to say all that because she is a consulting producer for a movie that is in development currently called Santa Jaws.
Oh my God. Oh my God. This is amazing.
Yes.
Like Santa Jaws.
Yeah, here's the log line. Trying to survive his family Christmas, Cody makes a wish to be alone, which ends up backfiring when a shark manifests and kills his entire family.
Oh my God!
This cannot be real, right? This can't.
No, it is 100% a real thing. Yes.
Oh, well, she has done quite a few shark movies. So she did Ozark Sharks and... Oh, where's the other one?
Oh, my Lord. This is fantastic. Sharks and Christmas movies.
Trailer Park Shark was another one. That was starring Tara Reid. A tropical storm floods Soggy Meadows Trailer Park and forces a hungry shark upriver.
This is fantastic.
She loves the sharks.
She loves the sharks. She loves Santa Claus. Yes. Put them together. It's like peanut butter and jelly. Here we go. Now make it a musical and we're golden.
Yeah, yeah. And then on that note, the director of these Picture Perfect mysteries is Ron Oliver, who is a legend in Hallmark. He has done tons and tons of Hallmark work, and you can find articles about him where he is basically interviewed as like the Hallmark guy. And he has done also, like, he became most famous. He started his career with the cult hit Hello Mary Lou Prom Night 2, called
The Blue Velvet of
High School Horror Movies.
Yes.
And he's done a ton of other horror work, but apparently what he is known for, and he says this sort of, I mean, semi-reluctantly, because he clearly loves Christmas, like, and all his pictures, basically, he's wearing a Christmas suit, you know, one of those ones that are printed with some crazy ugly sweater kind of print. He's like, yeah, I've done a ton of frightening, you know, film, scary movie stuff. But this is what everybody, you know, thinks of me for. And that's fine. So we were so lucky as to see a Ron Oliver, but not a Christmas one.
Not a Christmas one.
Oddly. Yeah.
Now, if we can just get the holy trifecta of like a Ron Oliver Hallmark Christmas mystery with a shark movie, where
oh my gosh,
set.
You know that Marcy is gunning for him to direct.
Please, let's do that.
Yeah, yeah, definitely.
So, all right. Well, I think that's all we've got for Picture Perfect. Jessica walks away with a win. Congrats, Jessica! It's like when we get a winner on here, it's almost like a birthday week kind of thing. Like she gets cake and gifts and she gets to like set the menu for the whole week. So
I do?
No, I'm walking that back. That's only when I win.
All right. I'll remember.
Please.
I'll keep that straight.
All right. Well, thanks so much for listening and we'll see you again next time.
See you next time.
Hey, everybody. Thanks for listening. We really appreciate it.
And now we want to hear from you.
Tell us your guesses, your scores, and your suggestions for what shows we should watch next.
Go to our website, cluedunitpodcast.com, or email us at cluedunitpodcast@gmail.com.
Or find us on Instagram and Facebook at cluedunitpodcast, or on Twitter at cluedunit.
And if you like the podcast, please rate us and review us on Spotify or Apple Podcast to help us get the word out. And maybe you'll hear your review read on the show.
Want to be a Whodunit private investigator? Leave us a few bucks at WhodunitPodcast.com and we'll send you a personalized, official Whodunit private investigator license.
Officially approved by the totally fake Podcasting Adjudication Board in their secret headquarters in a mountain outside of Squamish.
We hope to hear from you soon, because
watching TV is always better with friends. But yeah, she's like, we have to go. We're going.
And he's like, all right. Hold your horses.
Yeah.
By the way, small Midwest aside, do you know what the perfect comeback is when you're a child? What the perfect comeback is to hold your horses? And did anyone ever actually tell you to hold your horses as a child?
I don't think so. I think I said it, but okay. Yeah. What's the perfect comeback?
The perfect comeback is, of course, I haven't any horses to hold.
Oh, jeez.